I like the sound of that.
Okay.
And Brian disappeared.
Yeah, where'd he go? There he is.
He didn't like that the meeting was being recorded, so he left.
Listen, I saw that recording come up, so I'm getting the heck out of here. All right, so let's call the meeting to order first, and then we'll do the pledge of the flag, and then we'll get into our agenda, okay? So, Herb, you have your flag handy?
You know, I'm looking all over the place. I don't know where it is. I can't find it.
All right, Abe has one.
Oh, wait a minute. No, no, no. I found it.
All right, so we have one, which is
here
good.
Here we go.
All right, great. Thank you. Okay, great. Okay, pledge allegiance
to the flag, United States of America,
and to the Republic for which it stands,
one nation
under God, indivisible, liberty, justice for all. Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to ask that if you're not presenting or speaking, please go on mute so we can hear the presenter clearly. Okay, so we'll start with IS.
All right, let me just share my screen. Give me a second here if you don't mind.
Nope, we're good. I'll take your time.
Okay. Let's see. Let me make sure that I'm sharing the right screen. One more time. Okay, can you see that?
Yep. Yes, we can.
Okay, great. So thank you for the opportunity to present the 2022 budget for information services. First up, I should get my mouse working. Here we go. So first, we'll just quickly go through the mission statement, some of our needs that we've identified, some of the COVID-19 impacts, our goals for the coming year, and our budget as expected. So again, the mission for us for information services is a primary mission is to provide dependable information, infrastructure, services, and products to allow Ulster County government to be responsive and responsible to internal and external customers, partners, and constituents. We adopted a sort of a what we call our 4 C's principles. The customer service, collaboration, communication, and commitment really as a way to kind of focus our attention on best customer services practices and really in support of the county, again, to provide develop, maintain information technologies and provide secure, agile, and sustainable technology solutions, deliver a responsive and effective customer service in support of our constituents. So some high level needs that we've identified, and we need to really bolster our ranks with the right skilled personnel or consultants to really help deliver on our mission. We need to maintain contemporary training and career building opportunities really as the industry changes. There's some that we need to kind of adapt to that. One thing that came out of COVID-19 is, and certainly before that, is our ability to have a responsive and a robust cybersecurity practice, a greater involvement in IT planning. You know, for instance, if we have to move a department, to know what might be down the line so that we could plan and procure accordingly, create an institutionalized standard operating procedures that'll help us sort of mitigate risk, make, you know, change management decisions, and which really support the continuity of operations and disaster recovery. Some high-level COVID-19 impact. So throughout the whole COVID-19 pandemic, our regular deployment, PC deployment schedule has been really impacted. And it's been delayed by about 1 to 2 years, depending on different departments. And part of that is due to unanticipated equipment costs that we had to roll out for departments and other entities to support the COVID-19 response, and also more recently, supply chain issues, which are really, as you probably heard in the news, are really crippling a lot of entities, and we're feeling that directly by not being able to procure devices in an adequate time frame, or having to get orders canceled, et cetera. So those are some risks that we're currently experiencing. When COVID hit and there was a surge in cybersecurity and sort of breach attempts across the globe, we're feeling that ourselves as well. We see a lot of traffic on our firewalls from rogue states, if you will. So that kind of informed us that we really need to that there's a risk out there that we need to really start to get our arms around better. We had a surge in new technology adoption, from everything from Zoom to remote workforce capabilities to collaboration tooling and et cetera. Those were some challenges that I think we ought to have been there, but unfortunately the pandemic kind of sort of forced us to adapt, and so that was an interesting challenge. We learned a lot also from the Recovery Service Center. In support of the Recovery Service Center and the rolling out of those services, we noticed it really kind of addressed a need for an enriched analog and digital constituent services capability, with the ability to really engage with the constituents, track their needs, route those issues accordingly to the right departments or right entities, and also provide some reporting and feedback mechanisms. So that was a very informative outcome from COVID. Also just really shoring up and being able to support and secure our remote workforce properly with the right capabilities. And in support of that, we needed to expand our network bandwidth capabilities to support, the modern media rich content and collaboration tools that I think we've come to expect. So these are some direct impacts that we felt right from COVID. And if anybody wants to interrupt, just feel free to chime in. So our organizational structure. So on the left side, you'll see the sort of the items of the sort of outlined box. That was kind of the RSC 2.0, if you think of it. So what we found from and learned from the RSC and all the technology and services and people skills that were developed in response to COVID-19, as I mentioned, really highlighted this enriched constituent services capability. So this is really the RSC 2.0, the Constituent Service Navigator team, which will be housed in Information Services. It kind of harkens back to the day in Information Service where we were the operator. So when you called the main number for the county, it would reach Information Services. That would get routed via the phone to various departments in response and support of whatever the caller's needs was. So this is really the kind of the 21st century version of this. Again, using some of the experiences that we've learned from the RSC, from cloud-based call centers to 311 tooling to knowledge bases and even some bot technology. That kind of richness of experiences kind of feed into this new division of Information Services. Yeah, so that's a four additional roles that'll support that capability. We also have some additional capability, technical capability in our system to scale our capability in our system specialist role, which is really one of our foundational skills that we need, with supporting everything from our virtual machine environment, our networking environment, failover capabilities, patching, and a whole host of basically standard operating needs that we get behind the eight ball without the right amount of staff. And that particular role is very instrumental for us. And the application development specialist position is another role that it's really sort of spun off from in a previous incarnation, and that you know, we're trying to break out of these siloed capabilities and build capabilities that are more broad-based. So the application development specialist, the role is really kind of is very technical and can support multiple applications and have other kinds of technical capabilities that a modern IT organization needs. So that is another role that is a gap that we have that we're looking to fill in 2022. Again, that'll help bolster our ranks moving forward.
So Al, before we move off of this chart, I think with all the new positions, I want to give any of the legislators an opportunity to ask any questions about this specifically before we move on. If anybody has an issue, Lynn, you have a question? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not an issue, more a question, because I'm looking at the what was in the budget book, and obviously, well, maybe not obviously, the constituent service navigator is not part of your org chart in the budget book. So the information with regards to the new positions there is. So we probably want to update that. But so this was the resource recovery customer service function that was used for COVID that we're now moving into as a full-time service. And it's providing service to whom? Could you just clarify a little more on that?
Sure. So it's providing service to direct constituents. So someone, an Ulster County resident who has a need for social services would call this number or engage with them on our web portal and you know, through some tracking mechanism, but our 311 system, et cetera, we'll be able to track that constituent's engagement with the county and route them to the right department, hand off the ticket, if you will, to that department, and really have some metrics on how well we're doing, not as a department, but as a county, on responding to constituent needs. So it's really direct constituents engaging with the county directly. Mark, I think you want to weigh in on that.
Yeah, and so
you will close out. Just one question, just not to lose my train of thought on this. So you will, once you hand off, you will also then do a follow-up to close out to ensure that the service, the customer constituent is, questions were answered and service was delivered to meet their need?
Yeah, Lynn, and this is happening now. We use a program called QSend, where we create tickets, and mostly because of the way that the Recovery Service Center is, it still is now mostly COVID-19 related, but we've seen quite a few calls in, they dealt with a lot of the ERAP issues for DSS, the emergency rental assistance. People just, once they learn a hotline number, they call it for things that aren't necessarily related to the hotline. They just know someone's going to answer it. And so to date, we've done it through DSS employees coming in 3 days a week, purchasing, health department. We've used employees from all over county government to assist and be on the hotline. And we just believe it's an initiative that should live in IS and continue on permanently beyond this year and beyond COVID, because we've learned a lot from it, and we've gotten a lot of use out of it, not just through COVID, but through other departments. But yes, we will be able to track how many days it takes for someone to get a hold of, you know, a service in DSS, and we'll track through the system, and it'll really be a quality assurance use as well.
So coming out of financial services, I truly appreciate a good customer service operating function as it relates to our constituency. So I would assume that there was enough tracking to inform how this should be staffed. And I don't think I've actually seen anything. I know there things have been thrown out, but if you have just an understanding of how you kind of came up with, here's how we should staff it, this is the number of staff, how you're going to, track, just something a little bit more meaty, I think would be really helpful to better understand. And why, and Alan, this is no reflection on you, it's just a curiosity on my part, is why would you put it in IT as a service function? So I'm just you know, trying to understand that.
Well, I think when you think of the name of the department, Information Services, there's a certain umbrella around that. So where we not only, you know, maintain information services technology and services, but again, hearkening back to the day when there was a call, or as an operator, people will call to get information about county services. So that was the thinking that, and when you think, look across the county to other departments, there wasn't a lot. This seemed to be the most logical place to put that. Again, a part of it was just hearkening back to an earlier era of this department where that function was serviced out of, right? So,
So it was a good learning through COVID. How are you going to communicate this out to the constituency so that, you know, right now it's addressing COVID, but as we move forward, we're all hoping that we put that behind us. How do we communicate to our constituency that this is available? And let's just say hypothetically, we as part of, you know, kind of helping people to understand what government does for them, if we were to refer one of our constituents to this number, is there any kind of follow-up connection so we can ensure that our constituents' needs were met and a follow-up back with a legislator? So just trying to understand your thinking as you go through this.
No, before you guys answer that, hold on. Before you guys answer that, Lynn, Abe and Herb each had their hand up. So before we answer another question, we'll let those guys go. But go ahead, and Jim also. So go ahead and answer that one, and then we're going to move on to other legislators for a minute. Okay, thank you.
Now I forgot the question actually, but also the thinking. You know, I think Information Services brings a unique perspective to this because, you know, we already track stuff in our environment. So when you think about key performance indicators and how you look at your metrics and how that information kind of informs your decisions on how to either plan or to navigate in the future, this is something that we do regularly as an organization. So that thinking was another reason why our expertise in that space, I think, was a good fit. I forgot the initial question.
One last piece on that is that the website is an important front end to this as well. There will be an ability to not only call a number, but have a ticket created through a query to the website. And that's one of the reasons why IS made sense. They already oversee our website, and it just seemed like a good fit. And I think we covered.
And you'll see it in some of our budget numbers because, you know, we've got a small an advertising budget to help kind of promote the feature. And then there's also in the budget is a request for some funding to really retrofit and build out a really a strong services-oriented website that has, you know, a number of technical features but capabilities to provide feedback and email messaging and text messaging capabilities. So that's part of the whole sort of, if you can imagine, the convergence of both just a team with the right skill sets, but then also technology behind the scenes to help really support and deliver what we expect this service to do.
And I think the remainder of Lynn's question was, supposing you get a request from a legislator or another department, you're going to issue a ticket, and how is that traced back and closed out to the initiator? Say, for example, I refer a constituent to you guys for something. How would we know that is resolved? Is that what your question was, Lynn? No, thank you.
And there will be follow-up through via email and others that we can close out tickets and let you know where it ended up. Of course, there's certain, you know, private information that we wouldn't be able to share, but you would be able to know that we resolved the issue for the constituent.
So will there be a permanent reporting structure? And then I'm going to let, I think it was Abe, Herb, and then Jim. Will there be a permanent reporting structure to, you know, where you can compile all the data for the tickets open, tickets closed? And
yes, so there is definitely a reporting engine that in QSEN, as an example, that you can query the constituent tickets based on a number of criteria. It could be categories, users, you know, other issues, et cetera. So there is a robust set of reporting tools built into the 311 system that would enable us to do that kind of that level of reporting. I think some of it is also, you know, there's going to take some time to build out the whole process so that it's robust and streamlined. But from a high level, the ticketing system has the tracking and routing and reporting and follow-up capabilities as part of a technical solution. We would need to make sure that we build out the processes accordingly, which will require engagement with the rest of the department. Some of that work has already been done with the RSC, but would need to be fine-tuned and revised accordingly. Yeah.
Thank you. And so, Abe, go ahead.
Yeah, my question was along the same lines as Legislator Archer's. I appreciate the response, so I'll try not to cover that ground again. You know, the way that just kind of hearing this, the way that I almost think about this is when we were seeing the early days of social media, where it was kind of viewed as a technical thing, as an extension of the website, and then it really got elevated to really a core marketing function over the following decade. This could be something that's following a similar path. And while I think the answers to these questions on the technical side are really interesting, and it's great to think of a system that does everything, I would just encourage us to really consider this as an opportunity not to create a system, but as an opportunity to remove barriers, right? You know, technology, I think, is not, a virtue unto itself. It is something that in some ways enables connection, in some ways feels like it stands in the way of connection. And I'm not saying that that's the case here, but my point in terms of the programmatic side is I would just encourage you not to overthink or over-engineer this, and to kind of let the constituents and the department heads drive the development here, because the kind of, it's almost as though, like, when you're designing a college campus, you almost don't want to put the paving stones down. You want to see where people are going to walk and then lay the pavers where the grass is bare. We want to see the paths of desire from all of this. So while all of the different features of being able to follow everything through are great, and I love that they're there, I think this is a very exciting function, and I would encourage us all to look at it as a learning opportunity about the way constituents interact with every other department besides IS, and IS is removing that barrier between constituents and their departments.
To answer, just to follow up on that, I think that, again, there's really sort of two pieces to this. Really, there's a technology piece, which you've talked about, but then there's the personnel piece, the actual team, which is really the kind of a, if you think of it more of like a high touch capability that kind of helps to, extend some humanity and keeps the technology from being the barrier, you know?
Okay, so go ahead, Herb, you're up.
Bottom line, what's the cost of this to the budget?
Well, we could get to that if you'd like. If you want to, we could discuss it now, or we could get to the numbers in another slide or two.
Yeah. Whatever you would like.
Okay, so once we get there, we can have a further discussion. So if you don't mind, is there any additional questions before I move on?
Yeah, so we'll let Jim ask his question, and then Herb, when we get to that portion, if it comes up again, you know, we can see if you have questions afterward. All right.
Thanks, Brian. Question answered. Let's move on.
Okay. Ready to move on? Okay.
Yes, thank you.
So again, our 2022 goals and our objectives are to embrace changes recommended by our internal strategic planning initiative. Dan Proctor, who, as you may know, was the director of operations for COVID-19 response, and he has in his background, a organizational strategic planning background. So this has been very valuable in the last few weeks as we start to plan for our future in 2020 and beyond. So we want to embrace some of those changes from an organizational and strategic planning perspective. We want to, wherever we can, is to resource the department with the right skilled people based on our goals and emerging cultural technology changes, so cultural changes, kind of you alluded to that, Abe, which is really how people engage with technology. What are some of their expectations? So if we could be prepared to kind of navigate that space, we want to make sure we have the right folks on hand to help us get there. Improve our network management and cybersecurity capabilities, that I kind of alluded to that in some of my opening comments. and more formalized documentation and procedure, which, you know, is a challenge, but that's our goals for 2022, is to get that more robust. As I mentioned, we're going to stand up the constituent navigator services and the various tooling that goes along with that. Part of that is the redevelopment of the Maine County website, with a focus on constituent access and constituent services and ease of access. We've started this project, which is to partner with the New York State Information Technology Services and Department of Homeland Security on a comprehensive infrastructure cybersecurity assessment. That is we began that discussion. We will formally engage with them in 2022 to really dig under the hood and find out where our strengths and weaknesses are. Expand our cybersecurity awareness training. And do a proof of concept migration of our telephony services towards unified communications as a service. Really, you know, our VoIP system is showing its age. And we noticed that during COVID with a lot of the multimedia services that were running over our network, and some of our VoIP services were impacted with that. And so we want to move a bit of that or start planning the move off of our on-premise solution to a cloud-based solution. So that is something we're going to be exploring in 2022. In the previous year, we started a cloud-based disaster recovery solution for our financial system that was put on hold when COVID hit. We want to revive that so that we can fail over our financial systems in the cloud. And we're constantly, every year, we have a batch of various PCs and laptops that need to be refreshed. And so we'll continue that. We have some network gear that needs to be refreshed that are end of life, but we want to make sure we get that in place as soon as possible. Our print management services contract is expiring, and we will go for RFP for that in the coming year. And we've built out an in-house training and delivery platform that we'd like to scale out so that we can work with personnel and other departments to build out some homegrown training material for our personnel.
So Alan, I don't know, maybe I just missed it, but did you just skip over to disaster recovery?
I did not. So that we have a cloud, we were prototyping a cloud-based disaster recovery for our financial system. That's cloud-based disaster is in our Azure cloud environment. So we have it proof of concept. We just need to, you know, move it forward.
So is that 100% cloud-based, or is it hybrid in any
way?
The
idea would be that if it would be cloud-based in a disaster. So say there was a power outage, or there was a local power outage, or some other outage that impacted our ability to access the financial system, that would be spun up in the Azure cloud environment, so we could access it from the cloud. And then when the disaster was remediated, we would fail back over to our on-premise solution.
Thank you.
Any more questions?
No, you can go ahead.
Okay, so our budget. So you'll notice between 2021 and 2022, to answer the question about the funding. So we have in our budget, we have requested $175,000 to help with the website migration, really to redesign it, get some professional services, host it on a professional platform that has all of the right support model and SLAs around it. And we've begun the process of interviewing some of these providers, Granicus being one of them, Civic Plus is another one. So those solutions, which are tailored towards municipal entities with a focus on service orientation, and also capabilities that really enable constituent engagement. That those services, if we were to build it ourselves, would be really challenging. But so the $175,000 gets us there more quickly, kind of gets us off our antiquated website, and really moves the focus towards a constituent-based orientation from the website with the ability for the constituents to easily navigate and get to the content or support that they need.
So, Alan, is that all county departments, or is that a specific – are there any county departments excluded? Let me ask that question to this website.
There are some counties that have, like with the legislature, for example, you have your own website spun up on its own environment. So presumably that might stay there. I mean, in theory, this could be all comprehensive, but we're not quite there yet. I think part of this discussion will be a real in-depth engagement with the various stakeholders who might be end users of this platform. So in theory, it could be all inclusive. There's some migration activities that would need to happen if we were to kind of merge some of these satellite websites into a main county website, but I don't think they should be off the table. I think the platform and the capabilities of the service are substantial enough that we could potentially house the entire county organization on it with a lot of integrations behind the scenes. But again, that really is for a further discussion with the various stakeholders who would want to take advantage of this.
Right. So currently, how many satellite websites are there, excluding, you know, the main county one?
There's the sheriff, there's the comptroller, there is the legislature, there is UCAT, and tourism, to name a few. So there's five. Some of the heavy hitters, you know, what might be a challenge to integrate. But there are a handful of satellite sites that would either stay as is, or we would have to engineer a migration strategy.
And the clerk's office has their own as well?
Clerks, correct. You're right.
Yeah. So then this would more be in line with internal use for the county, from what I'm getting, right? I mean, I think, most of the items that are excluded are where the public would interface with the website versus internally, right? What departments, the clerk, the legislature, those are the ones that, people are hitting on the webpage to see, tourism, right?
So we would still be able to drive traffic to those external websites. The idea of the refresh is that when you go out and you look at municipal and county websites that are good, oftentimes they're services driven. Like, people don't know necessarily what department they need to go to when they have an issue. So the idea is to switch from a department driven website, which we currently have, to a services driven website. So you could query a search and say, I need help with this, and it'll get you right to where you need to go. And it would still get you to the legislature standalone site. It would just push you out to it.
Yeah, Lynn, go ahead.
Thank you. So this is a front end kind of navigator, of where to go. But how are we going to ensure a kind of a uniform look so that they know that they're in? So this 175 is not a lot to handle that kind of refresh or redesign of the website and make it more user friendly, because it isn't today.
Right.
I think the satellite websites could have some value with a process like this. So was there any discussion or thought about that as you were building this budget, or discussion with the other satellite sites?
We've had some discussions. I think part of the challenge, and we've heard this numerous times from other departments, is that when you talk about, sort of standardization and look and feel, making sure that when you land on the website, you know you're at the county website, for example, that behind the scenes, that content management system really drives that from an editorial perspective. So any new tooling that we would roll out for the website would have that similar capability, where you can enable departments to conform. The templates and the way that the site is engineered would force conformity into the look and feel. And there's some the abilities to really editorialize content so it goes up the chain for approval better than what we have now. I think that's one of the challenges. Some of the that we've heard this numerous times to other departments that the content management system behind the scenes now is antiquated. It's not user friendly. It doesn't allow for the same kind of level of review. The integrations that we might to be able to expose and say, output to a database or input from a database, those kind of capabilities are not available in the current content management system. So there's some advantages going to a more modern content management system. And to answer your question more directly, the framework kind of enforces a look and feel for uniformity.
Will that drive additional work to those satellite websites for the people who administer them, say for, in a clerk's office or tourism or the legislature?
If we preserve those satellite sites, yes. Right. So you'd still need that work that workflow on those satellite websites. You would still need that workflow.
No, but will this conforming to the templates of the redesign, will that force work on the satellites was my question.
I think it's all dependent on those satellite sites. Like I know the clerk has her own look and feel, and she's rolled that out herself. I don't think we would want to influence that. Similarly for the sheriff. So I think depending on what those satellite sites are, it may or may not influence them.
Okay, so I'm just trying to see if this will drive expense to another department that's not included in this $175,000. That's kind of where I'm going.
Right. It should.
Okay, thank you.
And if I could just answer Herb's question really quick, the division is $1,292 for, the question was, what is the cost for the legacy RSC? And from a personnel perspective, those four positions is about $270,000 in this year's budget.
So, and I just moved over to the next slide. You can see that between the 2021 budget and the 2022 budget, you see that difference.
So with these are all additional positions and there's going to be no positions eliminated to, there's no duplicate work taking place in those positions today that you're eliminating, or, how is that working? If these are just all four brand new positions and some of the work there is being done today, right? Mark, I think that's what
you said. At the RSC, right? Yeah. I mean, they have anywhere from, 6 or 7 individuals that serve 1 to 2 days a week. They have a couple people who serve more than that. So we can get away with it because, again, things aren't fully back from the recovery. But long term, we can't lose those positions having, part-time people like the health department individuals that serve. There's not as many there's not as much work on the environmental side with going to restaurants and inspections and new things to look at. So that's part of where we can get by now. In order to really ramp up this, we would need these positions to be the full-time positions.
Thank you.
We're not eliminating any other positions elsewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions on this page? Okay. We can move on.
And that is it.
Okay, great. I think we exhausted our questions, Alan. And our first one only went 15 minutes long. Okay, go ahead, Lynn.
Sorry, you spoke too soon, Brian. just one question. I saw that your revenues were down from last year. That's the interdepartmental intra-departmental revenues. And so just a question, particularly now with what you're taking on with the navigation, why would that be down? Isn't this what you charge other departments for your services?
Correct. So I'd have to dig into the details on that. But you know, certain services that we, you know, like we've clawed back some cell phones, VoIP services, things like that that might be impactful to those to that line item. But I'd have to dig into the details to give you a more precise answer.
Yeah, it just is curious to me when you're adding a navigating function like you are, there has to be some kind of value to the rest of the departments that would have some, you know, revenue trade-off, particularly because that department is solely focused on getting constituents to different parts of the government, correct?
Correct.
Right. We only charge back, though, Lynn, the departments that are reimbursable. So I have, you know, the health department, DSS, because otherwise,
because the federal funding, it would include some,
and the state federal and state, we get reimbursed. Otherwise you're just charging one part of a county government to charge the other. So I'd have to look at there may be some reasons, from a state aid level why it's down.
Yeah. I just thought it's curious. We're up everywhere else and particularly now with this department, I thought it just stood out to me.
Intergovernmental, that's what you're looking at?
Excuse me?
You're looking at the intergovernmental, which went from 79 to 34, I think.
That's not the number I'm seeing here. I'm seeing total revenue sources. It, you know, in 2019 it was 85, it went down to 73 in 20. It was 105 adopted in 21, and we're projecting 62 for 2022. Did I read it wrong? Oh, that's the total revenue source.
That's total revenues, yes.
Right.
If you look at the intergovernmental,
but it's still down, not much, but I was just curious as to.
Yeah.
It's still down from 2019. Just curious. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And I think we're comfortable with the way this was presented and the numbers that it includes. And we got a pretty good explanation of the changes in the budget. And I just want to thank you, Alan, for doing a great job there answering our questions. Mark, thank you. And unless there's any other questions, we'll move on now to tourism.
Okay, thank you so much. Let me get to my screen share. Okay, you guys. And technology works, even in Chautauqua, New York. I just wanted to recap some of these numbers that you've seen previously about tourism in Ulster County. It represents 41% of the Catskill region's tourism sales with $489 million in direct spending, and it drives over $284.6 million in labor income. And this number is the number of people employed still comes from 2019, which is nearly 7,000 people in the Catskill region. And what you see here is that, and also 15% of all employment in Ulster County is sustained by tourism, with it being the major employment engine for vulnerable groups such as women and youth. I just want to, if I can, recap quickly for you guys some of our results year to date. And you will note that we see increases across the board. We changed focus in our Instagram strategy. We opted for more engagement with our people who are on our Instagram page over paying for people to actually like our page. And we saw an increase of 23%. Facebook has seen an increase of over 53%. Twitter is not something that we focus on. It's kind of difficult to use. We're finding it difficult to use for tourism and to have it have a good ROI. So that increase was 5%. Really, the stunners here are these last two, which is our digital ads performance. Performing 30% over industry benchmark is remarkable. We work with an ad agency that is nationwide, and they only have one other TPA that they represent that's hit that 30% benchmark. So that's outstanding for us. And also what you will see here is our book direct referrals are up 50% year to date. And that is a direct result of a change in strategy that the department adopted along with the ad agency, where we were looking at a lot of data about visitation during the pandemic. And we saw a lot of people coming up here, but we didn't see them staying over. And I'm sure, as you know, when they don't stay, we aren't able to realize the most amount from that visitation. And so we decided instead to drive people in all of our digital ads to our Book Direct system. And that really increased visitation stays, as you will see on this slide, because of these occupancy tax numbers. So through Q3, occupancy tax revenue is $2.4 million, and that's 132.5% higher than 2020 and 62% higher than 2019. And I got those numbers directly from the Director of Finance. I just want to quickly go over some of the other areas of achievement that we've had this year. We've worked directly with more than 40 writers, resulting in feature stories in national publications and news organizations. And this is a list of some of those business, some of those outlets where we were directly able to get placement. And I don't know if you guys saw it, but the New York Times, a New York Times cover story in the real estate section that focused on Ulster County's tourism, and CBS News this morning, those two pieces hit simultaneously at the end of August. The CBS Morning News piece hit on like Friday morning, and that was exactly when the New York Times released their story, which was the cover of their Sunday Times that weekend. And our latest piece is actually here, and I'm going to try something I've never done before. I hope it takes us to this link. This story came out. Oh, it did. Okay. Now I don't know if I'm going to be able to get back. But this story came out 2 days ago.
We're not seeing it, by the way, Lisa.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry. All right. So it didn't work. So anyway, it's a story about coming to Ulster County for Thanksgiving, and that hit in the Wall Street Journal.
I think we have to share that screen as well. Like you.
All right. Well, let's see if I can do that. You know what? It's all right. I will send you guys the link because it's really a great story. Okay.
The whole PowerPoint. That would be great.
I will. And so then I really want to just before I launch into this, I really want to thank the partnership and collegiality that I share with our Economic Development Director, Tim Wiedemann, and our Director of the Office of Employment and Training, Thomasine Oliphant. We have been able to work together over this past year, and we share information, we share projects. And the partnership has been very valuable to our business community, our tourism business community. And I want to acknowledge that this was at the leadership of our county executive, Pat, and how lucky I am to work with two such great colleagues. So for economic development, our office has provided key data and marketing support to newly launched hospitality businesses, and or events that started up this year. And among them are Hutton Brickyard, Hudson House Distillery, Moon Burger, Bearsville Theater, Upstate Artist Weekend, and OMG Art Fair. And you may be wondering about where that data came from. It is something that last year when I met with you, I said that we were going to invest in. And we have cell phone data, I have AirDNA data, and I have other tools such as CrowdRiff, which really allow me to almost see our market in real time. And it's been very, very valuable, not just to us, but also to people who are thinking about developing tourism businesses or trying to grow their tourism businesses here. We've worked with projects not yet open on issues related to financing, you know, providing data needed to grow or prove a viable market or secure funding or grants, and on specific project based needs, such as somebody needed to find a distiller, somebody trying to do a project in Socrates couldn't get their the beginnings of their hotel. They were looking for a concrete contractor, and we have connected equity and building partners to certain other hospitality businesses as well. And we delivered visitation information, much of the data that I just spoke to you about, to more than 20 CFA applicants. So that's where we were. In workforce development, we've developed a series of education sessions for hospitality employers, addressing best practices for employee retention and recruitment. And you will see that we are planning the retention workshop for Tuesday, November 9th at 3:30. I think it's going to be fantastic. And all of you may know that it's much more cost efficient to retain an employer than to try to hire new. So we are trying to help our tourism businesses at their direct pain points right now. And we think that helping them understand how to retain their workers is the best thing that we can do right now. We will be working in partnership with the Office of Employment and Training and the Mid-Hudson Small Business Development Center to hold a hospitality and tourism job fair in April of 2020. And we have been working with the Office of Employment and Training, SUNY Ulster, and the Office of Economic Development to develop a multi-business customized incumbent worker training for the hospitality sector. Looking specifically right now at the restaurant industry, but thinking that we might be able to grow that out to other hospitality sectors as well. And lastly, these are the areas of achievement within the department. With encouragement and support from the executive team, we have reinvigorated the Tourism Advisory Board and developed new involvement in leadership there. They actually worked quite long and hard on a travel guide subcommittee who came up with the recommendation to do a guide for going into 2020. And there are two big recommendations for doing the guide are, after doing a ton of research themselves and working with other experts in the field, what they concluded was not having a travel guide actually erases a travel destination from like the view of people who may be interested in traveling. And it also, and the other big takeaway from them is that not having a travel guide doesn't allow us to define ourselves, because if we don't do it, somebody else will. And they might not be selling what it is that we think is important, which is sustainable tourism. We spun up a subcommittee on COVID regulations for the wedding and catering industry. Their work was directly used by I Love New York, NISTIA, and NISTA, which are the two statewide tourism organizations, and the state of New York to develop final guidance. And I'm so proud of the work that they did. And then this same Tourism Advisory Board turned around when our matching funds were potentially in trouble, and they worked like mad to make sure that they were reinstated in the budget. On a personal level, I've been named to the New York State Tourism Industry Association Board of Directors. I am here in Chautauqua to be installed. I think because of other work obligations, I'm going to miss that. That's supposed to occur Thursday morning. But they have named me the chair of their statewide workforce committee. I am a member of the Mid-Hudson Regional Economic Development Council's Live Work Play Committee, the president of CATS, and our office took over Ulster for Film, and we moved. Just briefly, these are the things that we have left as we end 2021. We brought in one of the biggest influencers on Instagram and are waiting to see, they came to Mohonk and their stuff should be hitting next month. We did a photo shoot that was just amazing. We are still running seasonal ads, and the biggest project by far that we've taken on is a website redesign. And I would be totally remiss if I did not right now thank Alan Macaluso and his entire team. He has about 5 people who have sat through endless meetings with us as we've gone to launch this. I do want to give you a little look at what it may look like. I was a little nervous about showing this to you, mostly because you see a lot of things on this screen. And I just want to say, it's not all going to look like this. What you're looking at here is, they're showing me, like the fonts that they're going to use, maybe how some pictures would look, where sections might be. So I just want you to say that what we have done is adopted, as you can see, almost an Instagram visual approach to the main picture in our website, which is different and unique. So what does our 2022 budget do? Our new initiatives definitely include designing and printing and distributing a travel guide, revamping our hiking brochure. We are thinking that we're going to link to important nearby attractions, but we're going to need to go out to RFP for this project, and we're going to need to talk to designers and that kind of thing. We are working with partners on developing the Trailstown model, which will encourage businesses to see the commercial benefit of providing services and goods along our rail trails and driving people into our towns, villages, and hamlets along our rail trails. We are going to adopt Leave No Trace language and messaging in everything that we do, because we saw coming out of 2021 how important that is. We will be creating a galleries/music venues brochure, and we're going to issue an RFP on a records management system. We need to figure out an easy way to have a one-stop, one-entry system. And for right now, that system is Excel, but it isn't the best way for us to track, contacts with businesses, or even for us to get information out that we need, to have lists easily and quickly, let's say, of all of our UPIC places. Our ongoing work in this budget includes extending our contract for one more year with Belo, distribution contracts that will target New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and Connecticut. And I have direct information that shows me those are our best markets, along with metropolitan New York City. We will go back to attending travel shows, continue to bring the press in for visits, and we will be delivering a series of education sessions for our industry so that they can become more efficient, more robust, more sustainable. And with that, I want to say thank you all for your time. And do you guys have any questions?
So I do.
Okay, so
I remember the consternation we had about the travel guide. And, you know, how some people were so couldn't really decide whether we should do away with it or not. Right. And so mm-hmm. I take it now that we find that there's value in it and we should, get it out there as much as possible. Did I read that correctly?
That's 100% right. What this committee did over the course of about 4 months was had experts come in. They looked at their own data and they looked at trends. And interesting, Brian, one of the things that they found out is that Gen Zers, this whole trend towards nostalgia, Gen Zers are actually moving towards print, especially if it's extremely well done and if what is being given to them is highly curated. And so we issued an RFP for the travel guide. Those RFPs are due at the end of this month. And we are asking for innovative ideas. We don't want a telephone book, but we want something that's, that matches our brand.
Right. So has there been a consideration to individual guides for sectors, for ecotourism, for wine trails, for restaurants, for music venues, something like that?
Yeah, I think that the one, so the two pieces that I talked about is, so we had a hiking brochure, and really what we need to do is revamp that, because what we're finding from the data that I'm able to see in some of my tools is that people usually, believe it or not, couple a hike or a bike ride with a visit to a winery or a craft brewery, and then they like to look for like other fun things to do. And by that, I mean like music venues. So that piece needs to be rethought, and what we put on it needs to be really thought about. I really want to do a piece that allows our music venues and our galleries kind of to shine. That's not something that we've done in a long time, and it's a valuable market. And I have data that shows that our average visitor here is 43 years old, and I think that they're super interested in music.
All right, great. Any questions for Lisa before we let her go on to her conference? All right, Lisa, thank you very much. Oh, go ahead, Lynn, sorry.
I just want to say congratulations on your award, Lisa, and thank you for your presentation. Sorry to interrupt your special day.
No, it's okay. Thank you. I'm happy to have had this chance to tell you guys everything that we did this year. It's been great. Thank you.
Yeah, so you really, you know, did well in a really tough environment over the last couple of years here. I know that, you know, it's not been an easy thing to be director of tourism during COVID. That is pushing a rock uphill is a minimal way to say that. So good luck going forward. I think you have a great plan, and I, you know, look forward to supporting as much as we can with our committee. Thank you.
Thank you guys. Thank you so much. All right.
So then we're now going to move on to Office of Training, Employment and Training, rather. And that would be Thomasine, please. I guess, right?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
I just want to, Lisa, whenever you can, stop share.
There you go.
No, it's no problem. Okay. All righty. One second. Okay. Do you guys see my screen?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Wonderful. Let me just, from the beginning. Okay. So again, with, you know, continuing through COVID, just maintaining a redesign of our service delivery for the Ulster County Career Center, we have been providing services by appointment. We transformed our training room into, you know, having the protectors, the plexiglass, and making sure that we can still serve Ulster County residents by appointment, by phone, and still, you know, not everybody has access to internet to be able to apply for jobs or apply, you know, for support through internet. So we still have our doors open to be able to meet with customers and provide that service. I just wanted you all to know, New York State Department of Labor staff, they are here in the Ulster County Career Center, but they are providing their reemployment services remotely. So they have just transitioned about 2 months ago from working on UI and have, you know, now have come back to doing reemployment services, but they are providing those services by phone and remotely by using WebEx to meet with customers. So that is how we've been operating in the Career Center. Also, we have New York State Department of Labor virtual job readiness workshops. They have them monthly. Calendar goes out monthly, so we make sure to have that on our website. We make sure to post that on our Facebook page and making sure to get that out to our customers and out to the public. There is going to be a New York State Department of Labor virtual career center. They are currently working on that. They did a pilot for that. So it's not available yet. My staff will also be trained in that. So that'll be hubs as an alternative to serving customers in person. So that will be a whole virtual network, a way of meeting with customers, both Department of Labor staff and our WIOA funded county staff will be using that. And again, WIOA stands for Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. So I'll be sharing with you some training opportunities and employment program updates and you know, reviewing our Disability Resource Coordinator services. I actually just had a meeting prior to this with New York State Department of Labor, and they just shared with us that there's going to be more funding to expand that program. So, you know, as you all know, our funding is federally funded, and then we receive state funding. So, you know, as for the county's concern, that's just continuous revenue for the county as a bonus. So I just wanted to provide, you know, some a data snapshot of our services. In 2020, we provided paid occupational skills training for 45 adults, dislocated workers and youth, and 7 on-the-job training contracts, totaling a cost of $195,291. In 2021 so far, just so everybody understands, we don't operate on a calendar year. Ours is a program year, so we go from July 1st to June 30th. So we're halfway through. So in 2021 so far, we have provided paid occupational skills training for 39 adults, dislocated workers and youth, and 10 on-the-job training contracts, totaling a cost of $214,953. And those trainings include Class A and Class B commercial driver's licenses, LPN, CNA, HVAC, you know, phlebotomy, surgical tech, front of web development, welding, manufacturing, and more. So we are continuously putting individuals in training. We know that with this job market right now, it's really tough trying to encourage, you know, those who are on unemployment to come out and look for work. We're doing the best that we can as a team to really encourage and promote job openings, you know, by doing email blasts, by contacting, by phone, individuals to share about these opportunities. So my team is very busy with doing extensive outreach to Ulster County residents. We did put on our summer youth employment program, so I'm not sure if everybody was aware. And I wanted to give a comparison of what we did last year opposed to, you know, the numbers we had last year to this year. So numbers of youth placed, we placed 131 youth. We went over our usual cap. We had 39 work sites, which is a few more than we had last year. Over like 15,331 hours worked. We raised the wage to 50 cents more, so $13.50 an hour. Number of in-school youth was 116. Out-of-school youth was 15. And a huge jump in the number of youth extended. So youth who have been offered jobs after the placement were actually way more than we had last year. So we had 29 youth that were offered positions, whether it was year-round employment by the employer or continuously through the summer. And I'm going to talk to you about the state provided us with extra gun violence prevention funding to extend our summer youth employment program so that we can keep kids in work experiences until school started. And this was with our gun violence prevention initiative. But before I go into that, I did want to talk about, wanted to do something new to support the Green New Deal for our county executive with making sure that we're providing opportunities for youth to get experience into green jobs. So we had a total of 6 work sites and we had a total of 20 youth placed at these work sites. And, you know, we had, you know, explanations of what makes this business green. And so we're going to keep on, keep this initiative as a little side piece for the Summer Youth Employment Program to make sure that we are exposing young people to green opportunities, because these are youth age 14 through 20. So we're really capturing those youth that are either in school or out of school. And, you know, they're learning different skills, different aspects of what it is to be in the green field, whether it's through construction, whether it's farming. whether it's in the restaurants where they are using those practices. So I'll make sure that everybody has this PowerPoint to read through it. But this was just a great opportunity. And County Executive Ryan did have the opportunity to come visit the YMCA Farm Project, which was wonderful, and meet with the students there. And the students were able to explain to him, you know, what makes, you know, their opportunities green, and just really give him that explanation about what their work experience looked like. So it was a great experience, and the students were really, really grateful that he took the time to come and visit. So we received an additional $81,548 that was state funding provided through TANF to us to extend our summer youth employment program. So again, this is an additional $81,548 in revenue to the county. So we were able to expend all our summer youth money plus all of this additional money. So all money for summer youth has been expended. We're really happy that we're able to use all the funding so that we've ensured that we had were able to have all these youth have experiences. So this is just a breakdown of the costs. The wages, $66,120, program costs, administrative, an average of 30 hours worked, total number of youth, and these were Kingston youth. So this funding was specifically to extend youth in Kingston, as Kingston, we know, is the area that has the highest amount of gun violence, and the total number of work sites. And I really appreciate all the businesses that were so kind enough to extend the placements for these young people or take on other youth to ensure that we can keep our youth safe working and, you know, keeping them off the street so that they can continue on getting these work experiences so that they can have a smooth transition into school. As at that time, there were a lot of shootings going on. And then New York State was provided us with $300,000. So there's $300,000 is going to what we're calling the Greater Vision Initiative. This is a gun violence prevention initiative by the governor, by our previous governor, who had sent this down to all the Workforce Development Board areas to provide 60 youth. Like, we all have different goals, but for Kingston, we have a goal of supporting 60 youth to obtain good paying jobs. So we have partnered, which so happenedly, it was perfect timing with the AVERT team being formed. We partnered up with the AVERT team, and now OET is a main player, main service provider in that team to make sure that the young people are funneled through and connected to our services. We actually had our first young person, 20 years old, connected that we did, and then we have another AVERT meeting tomorrow. So really excited that we're able to collaborate together as a county and work together with probation, Youth Bureau, Department of Mental Health, you know, Family at Woodstock, all together, community partners as well as our county partners, you know, to make sure that we're keeping our youth engaged and safe. And one of the first responses of, you know, providing support is getting this young person into a paid work experience. So this funding came right in time for the initiative that the county had put through. So we're being able to pay $14 an hour for these internships, providing on-the-job training, mentorship, job development, placement, resume and interview assistance. And, you know, participants must be age 18 through 24. They must be unemployed, underemployed, or out of school, meaning not in high school, not in college. And we do have a little bit of flexibility of funding to serve, you know, Ellenville area. We want to make sure we also want to serve Ellenville because we also know that is an area of need. So we will make sure to serve a percentage of youth in Ellenville. We're just really grateful for this funding. And again, $300,000, that is $300,000 in revenue for the county. So really, really grateful to have this flexibility of funding because it is separate from our WIOA dollars. This is also not from DOL. This is strictly state. We were in the process of developing it. This funding initially started from August 2021, and it goes till July 2022. So we have a year for this funding. So really excited. And, you know, Mario, who's leading the AVERT team, he's just really wonderful. And I just really want to give him that shout out because, you know, he has been a great partner, and every member of the AVERT team has been really supportive. So I think with all our services together, we're really going to really make sure that these youth are connected and off the streets and engaged in positive mentorship experiences and getting the life skills that they need. Another initiative that we've been working on that you all know about is our Ulster County Green Careers Coalition. And we, you know, it just feels like I just can't believe how quickly we had put this coalition together and how much work has come out of it. The mission of the Green Careers Coalition, if you aren't aware, is to develop relationships and scalable models to accelerate the county's Green New Deal by helping residents access training and job opportunities and businesses connect with high quality job candidates. The coalition, we've designed an interactive green careers map pathway chart to help illustrate all the various ways job seekers locally can access green careers and training opportunities and working to promote green opportunities throughout the county. So this week happened to be Climate Solutions Week. So I did two presentations earlier this morning. We had a presentation for Ulster BOCES students that was recorded. And we also invited the 8 county area high schools to be able to participate. It was recorded, and also the link was sent out to all the high schools, all the guidance counselors to share with the teachers so that we can support this information of the different ways of getting into a green career for these high school students and Ulster BOCES students. So we had representative from the union speak. We had one of the businesses speak, RICOR, Scott Arnold, and a young man that we placed through our young adult employment program who's currently working with him. And he also is going through the on-the-job training with him currently right now. So it was great for the students to hear from a peer as well, that someone who's actually in the program. I'll share this PowerPoint out, the link for our Green New Deal website to our Green Careers page is on here. And then we have the link to the Green Careers Pathways chart as well. And just so this was, just so you know, this was our agenda, just to see the different members. And your fellow also county legislator, Mina Jo Green, was with us as a panel member. So we were really happy to have her. And she showed us some great support. So we're really great to be able to be a part of this. It was the Hudson Valley Climate Solutions Week. And I also had the opportunity to speak later on in the afternoon for New Yorkers for Clean Power to also promote, as I was the only representative for a county that was a state panel discussion. So I was representing Ulster County and the work that we're doing with the Green New Deal. I mentioned that, you know, Ulster County became the first county in New York State and among the first in the nation to release a comprehensive Green New Deal. So I was really great. I was really excited to be able to promote that and share the work that we were doing. And that's about it. So I also wanted to share one more thing. On the board, we did form a healthcare consortium, and we did come up with a healthcare report. So I will also share that in an email out to you all so that you can read that through. But the three positions that we realized that we were in need of are CNAs, RNs, and LPNs. Now, we currently don't have an LPN program, so Ulster BOCES is working on that to see if there's a way of bringing it back. And I also wanted to share that during my panel for the New Yorkers for Clean Power, I got to speak after a representative from NYSERDA. And if you all are not aware, Ulster BOCES was just awarded $500,000 grant from NYSERDA to build a green collar workforce. So it was great that I was able to, during that presentation, really thank NYSERDA for the support of how they supported Ulster BOCES as well as SUNY Ulster's Green Careers Academy. So this is just the work and the collaborations we've been able to do, and just really excited and grateful for the work that we've done this year. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Any legislators have any questions before I ask my quick question? So if I did the math correct, you helped about 100 youth this summer. Is that an accurate number of everything totaled up?
Yes, about over 100 youth.
Over 100 youth. Now, so when you go through like the summer jobs and then the internships, I know that you did elaborate a little bit about the pathway to internship to permanent employment, but is there any kind of pathway laid out for the summer jobs? Because I noticed that there were some of our bigger employers associated with those summer jobs. You know, is there a pathway there that where you keep in touch with the young adults who take part in that, where you can pull them along, you know?
Yep.
Okay.
So a lot of the times, like the same employers that we work with for their summer, we also use for a year round. And another great partnership we just did, RBW, who the new company that moved here that's sharing, you know, our building, we actually just made a partnership with them. The Boys and Girls Club had some, you know, members that recently were looking for jobs. They had, you know, aged out of the program, and we connected about five of those young people. So they're going to be working, coming into our internship program, making about like $14 an hour. And we made this partnership with RBW that once they go through the internship program, then they're going to be hired through them and be making about $20 an hour. So they know that. So we're starting to work with businesses and being really strategic to make these pathways, and so that we can help these, so we can communicate to the young person, like, you may be starting out right now at this, but once you're trained, look at how much you're going to be making and look at the quality of job. And it's not just about how much you're making, but the quality of life you'll have at the job, because that's a great company. They really treat their employees well. There's a great culture, and it's, you know, different type, you know, hands-on work. There's a different type of work experience for every different kind of people. So I feel like that model we've had right now is like, that's an ideal model we need to keep doing, with making sure that we're connecting the youth, community youth serving agencies with a business and making those pathways. Go ahead, Len.
Thank you.
Thank you. This was really informative. A lot of the placements, were they mostly coming out of Kingston? Because you mentioned that you're going to try and focus or at least extend some of the services into the Ellenville, which I think could really use it. So, yes. So are you predominantly Kingston focused or that area?
Well, all of our funding for the Young Adult Employment Program that we usually have through WIOA funding, that's for the whole county, as mm-hmm. well as our Summer Youth Employment Program. So we usually have kids from all over the county. But the specific funding that we got to extend the summer program, that was specifically for Kingston. So that 65 kids, that was specifically Kingston. But during the regular 4 weeks of the program, that was, you know, all kids from all over the county. Mm-hmm. And we have a good number of Ellenville businesses and youth in Ellenville. We even partnered with Ellenville High School to provide job readiness training. And then they're working at the high school and getting that mentorship. So we have this great partnership we established with Ellenville High School that we're just going to keep continuing every year, because the Ellenville principal, he helps to recruit students. Also, with the gun violence prevention funding, so that is specifically, it says 75% has to be used for Kingston residents, but we want to make sure, we know that Ellenville, we want to make sure that we can also capture Ellenville. So that's why we were making sure to on our flyer to put both.
Got it. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Presentation.
Thank you.
Real quick. So when does that gun violence grant expire?
So it expires July 2022. We necessarily mm-hmm. didn't get the money until August. So mm-hmm. I have a feeling that they would do an extension. Mm-hmm. I don't see them, you know, they are very flexible with us. Mm-hmm. But it does expire July 2022.
Right, because that seems to me like you seem a little excited about that, like it's a successful program. You feel like it's going to be, you know, highly effective, right?
I think it will be effective, especially with partnering with the AVERT team, like
right.
as a resource. I think hand in hand with that group, it will be very successful.
Right. And so I'll throw a little bomb towards the executives, deputies here. Is there any way that, you know, after July of 2022 that we could potentially use some ARP money to continue funding a program like that for Office of Training there? Just throw it out there. We have a lot of potential uses. And if we can, you know, curbing gun violence and training youth, I don't know what could be more important than that.
Right.
You know, so something to think about. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you very much. That was very informative. I enjoyed that presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you all so much for all your support.
Okay. So we're going to move over to the planning department now. Mr. Doyle, I saw you there. There you are.
Hi, everyone. How's everything going? Good?
So far, so good. We're only 45 minutes behind schedule, which is pretty darn good for legislators.
Can you see my screen or not?
Yes.
Okay. So thank you for the opportunity to talk about the department's efforts and it's the 2022 budget. Before I start, I would just want to say that for me and for the department, we don't accomplish what we do without the significant amount of support that you never see in terms of working with us. We have extensive contacts and work with DPW, Alan from IS and the IS staff, also contract management and finance. A lot of that work you don't see, it happens behind the scenes, but without them, we don't do what we do. The other thing is that we support a number of boards and commissions, and without those individuals at the local level, and volunteers that serve on those boards and commissions, we are significantly less effective than we are with them. So let me just see if I can. So I wanted to start off with a look at the organizational chart for the board. So we have an additional staff position that was added, recommended to be added to the budget for 2022, and that was a senior planner's position. And that senior planner position would be working in the housing, on the housing issues that the county executive and the county legislature have identified as a priority. We divide the office into basically five major areas of concern. One of them being transportation, and we are something called a transportation council, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. We also do a number of special projects. The planning board and the planning department is almost like an office of miscellaneous affairs. If it doesn't fit well or if some other department is overwhelmed with effort, that work gets shuffled off to the planning department. And a lot of the work that gets done on a capital project basis has to go through planning in order for it to essentially move to implementation. So we provide a lot of support in those areas as well. And then we have a statutory responsibility under the charter and also under state law to do land use work. We essentially review zoning and planning projects at a local level. Have to come to the county planning board for review and for efforts, and that's under that. And then, as everybody is aware, we also work on demographics. The 2020 census is out. If you don't know, Ulster County lost a little bit of population in 2020. We're now working with the reapportioning committee on that. And then the housing work, which I'll talk about later. And finally, our work with the capital program itself. I thought I'd do something unique and essentially present the budget first. So what we've done is essentially move the budget into those program areas that I just mentioned. So you get a sense of what the personnel costs and the total costs are associated with that. I would point to the bottom, which is one of the larger cost items within the county planning department's budget, and that's transportation. There is actually a negative balance on that in terms of revenue. And the reason for that is that we actually get 95% of the revenue for our expenditures of transportation are supported by the state and federal governments. And we're able to charge back things which are not in our regular budget, like all of our indirect expenses to that as well. So that results in the county actually paying for itself with respect to the transportation, with respect to the transportation council. Any questions? Okay. Let me talk a little bit about transportation. So the Ulster County Transportation Council is essentially a creation at the federal level. We're something called a Metropolitan Planning Organization. And we are responsible to develop three basic things. We have to do a transportation improvement program. We have to do a unified planning work program on an annualized basis. And we also have to do a long-range transportation plan. We get about $454,000 of federal money on an annual basis to support the Transportation Council. Within the office, it supports two full-time planners. In addition, it supports about 20% of my time and 20% of the administrative aide's time within the office. The new studies that we're programming, we operate under state fiscal year. So the new studies that we're programmed, which will begin probably around the first of the year, but will continue for another year and a half, is a New Paltz connector study. It's a congestion management study in the New Paltz area on Route 299. We're also involved in a route, we're currently working on an RFP for a Route 9W study in the town of Ulster, and that would be basically from ShopRite up until you hit the areas in and around Adams Fair Acre Farms. In the city of Kingston, the city has asked us to do a rail safety analysis. We also are going to be involved in a regional trail wayfinding, we've done wayfinding in Ellenville. We've done wayfinding in Rosendale, and the numbers of trails within the communities are now such that we wanted to do a regional marketing and wayfinding area study for those particular areas. Also, given the fact that we've had a significant amount of congestion on Route 4455 going up over the mountain, into the Shongums, the town of Gardner and the town of Rochester essentially asked us to do studies on the Route 4455. We have completed studies on the UND corridor, trail feasibility analysis in the Shandaken area. We've also completed a road safety analysis, a UCAT fleet storage facility, and a long range transportation plan update. And we have ongoing studies, one of them we just started, which was a resiliency of the transportation system. And we're moving right now on our ongoing studies and on the new studies that we'll do. We're moving away from essentially producing these studies in report format, and we're going to be producing them in a web-based format. We're working with the IS office, and we're working with others to essentially use something called ArcHub. An ARC storyboard to do those studies. And and what that allows us to do is it allows us to do a substantial amount of interactive mapping with regard to the studies, as well as tell a story without essentially producing a written PDF or a written report. And that's the direction that a number of the transportation councils around the nation are heading. We took a look at that. If you want to take a really good look at an excellent look at a web-based study, Dutchess County recently completed their long-range transportation plan, and it's a web-based format. It's called Moving Dutchess Forward. You can Google that, and you can take a quick look at that if you want to. We will issue a call for projects in December of this year, and we will add those projects to the UPWP for the 2022-2023 area. Just to give you an idea of how large we are in terms of the area that we're planning, Ulster County is part of a three-county area that's known as a transportation management region. It includes Orange County, Dutchess County, and portions of Ulster County. The Orange and Ulster County is actually the urbanized areas within the county. Our planning area is actually the whole county, and what you're not seeing is there's a little bit of piece of up in Greene County. The urbanized area for Ulster County actually extends to, I think, three census blocks in the Greene County. We are doing work on these three counties. The three MPOs operate together. We have a substantial amount of transportation funding that comes into these three counties, both in terms of planning funds, as well as in terms of actual implementation funds. We've just completed, as of last Friday, we just completed a 5-year certification review. It was a week-long review by the federal agencies that are involved, FTA and FHWA, of our efforts in transportation planning. The 21-22 UPWP takes a look at the projects that are currently here. The major studies that we have in this study are the Transportation Resiliency Study, which we've begun, the Route 9W corridor that we talked about, the Route 4455 corridor, and the regional trail wayfinding. And that gives you the breakdown of the funds that we actually get on an annual basis. A little bit more than this, it depends. But we also do some sharing funds with other MPOs within the state of New York. We have completed and adopted in September of this year a long-range transportation plan called 2045. It has 8 major goals for the transportation plan itself. This plan was completely written in-house, so if you have an opportunity, it is online. If you have an opportunity to take a look at it, it is a credit to the staff of this agency in terms of its ability to produce maps, as well as do the graphic work associated with the plan itself, and understanding all of the needs and requirements that you have to meet in order to meet your federal requirements. We did add a new section to this plan, actually 2. We added one on sustainability or resiliency to the plan, and we also added a section on transportation equity. I talked about something called a TIP, which is a transportation improvement program. This will give you a sense of some of the numbers here. We currently program around $28 million on an annualized, on a 5-year basis of FTA money within Ulster County. And on the FHWA side, which are roads and bridges, about $64 million comes through the Transportation Council for programming. On the transit side, in addition to the money that we have to do relative to Ulster County, we also have responsibilities to the TMA as a single urbanized area. The TMA is currently programming somewhere in the neighborhood of around $20 to $21 million on an annualized basis for transit, and that's collaborative between the three MPOs and the staff of the three planning departments, which act as host agency for those MPOs. To give you a sense of the scale of this, for the CARES money when that came down, for the pandemic, the region got $86 million in order for us to essentially support transit during the pandemic. And under the most recently signed American Recovery Act, the region had $66 million come down that we're currently working through to try to program for transit, for improved transit. We're currently working with UCAT on a number of initiatives and working with them on their program of projects. We have an ongoing working relationship with UCAT relative to their capital needs, and have completed a regional study in terms of the capital needs of transit throughout the region. Moving away from transportation and talking about special projects, this is sort of that discussion that I told you about where, you know, the county planning department becomes the office of miscellaneous affairs. And so we've been involved in a number of capital projects, which are not easily assigned to an individual department, but they get assigned to the planning department. The new projects that we're looking at and proposing for 2022 is a water and sewer GIS analysis. Believe it or not, we do not know in this county where water and sewer districts and systems lie. And so it's a barrier from an economic development standpoint when you have to begin to ask your questions in terms of where the water lines are and where the district boundaries end. So we're going to engage in an RFP and a consulting study in order to do that. And part of that is also working with our health department to do an analysis on that water and sewer in terms of capacity. We're also going to do a green infrastructure parking feasibility analysis. One of the reasons to do that is there are substantial amounts of money available for stormwater work that we can do associated with green infrastructure. And effectively, we think that what we can do is find money to essentially rehabilitate our parking facilities and provide additional stormwater work associated with them. One of the areas that we're looking at perhaps that will work well is the courthouse itself in Uptown Kingston. And then we're also looking at a public safety campaign. There are been a number of issues associated with traffic and public safety associated with that. And one of the things that we had proposed to the county executive staff in working with the traffic safety board over the years is that the transportation council and take over some of the responsibilities as a coordinator for the traffic safety board. On ongoing projects that we currently have, as you know, we've completed the Ashokan Rail Trail. We're currently monitoring that trail, and we continue to provide support for that trail. Midtown Linear Park is currently under construction. It's about a $1.4 or $1.5 million construction contract. They were actually paving today. They have base coats down, and we expect to complete that project by the end of 2021. Right now, the current date in the contract is at the end of November. We may run a little long because there's some bridge work that the city is doing is over the Midtown Linear Park, and the contractors are coordinating on some of those areas. We're also working with the Emergency Management Department on a public safety radio tower. That would be located in Saugerties. We've been engaged with the community of Saugerties in terms of getting the necessary planning approvals for about 8 to 10 months. We finally have those planning approvals and the bid documents are out. We expect that we'll be able to start that project later this year and complete hopefully by next year, depending upon some of the delays associated with the equipment availability. We are also starting work on, in order for us to do our interoperability efforts with the emergency management folks, we're also starting work on an RFP for additional towers that we'll need for the radio system changes that we need to make. My understanding right now is that we're going to need at least two additional towers in the Shandaken area and another additional tower in the Marbletown area. We'll go through a site selection process with the radio consultants on those. Then we'll go through a planning process in terms of siting those. And that would include an analysis of view sheds. It includes photo simulations of the towers themselves, as well as all of the necessary work that you need in order to make sure that the tower, when you build it, actually works. We're also working with the Veterans Department on a new veterans cemetery in New Paltz. We are currently in a phase 3 archaeological effort with respect to that. That archaeological effort, we've done some ground penetrating radar. We're coordinating with the Indians on that. The site is highly sensitive with respect to archaeological efforts. So we will see what the ground penetrating radar looks at. Hopefully we don't find any burial sites within our proposed cemetery area. We do have approvals from the village planning board with respect to our ability to have immunity from their local zoning statute. Believe it or not, cemeteries were not a permitted use within the village. We managed to pick a site where the village boundary runs down the middle of the proposed area. We anticipate that if we come up okay with regard to our seeker work effort on our ecological efforts, that we could begin construction in 2022. We continue to help the economic development folks and others with respect to Tech City for a strategy and a vision moving forward with regard to that. And we're working with the Reapportionment Commission with respect to the 2020 census. And we would anticipate that that work would continue on to 2022. We work with our IS department to choose a software for that group. And we've given presentations to the group in terms of that software as well. The software will reside, the operating portions of that software, we'll have a copy in our office, and then it's going to reside so that the members of the commission and others can essentially produce their own plans on a web-based version of the software. And then we have a responsibility under the charter with respect to the capital program And we've worked with the with the executive staff on the development of this year's capital program. And then the county planning board has a responsibility to essentially comment on that back to the county executive, as well as back to the legislature. Just taking a look at some of these, I just wanted to give you an idea of some of the work that we've done in terms of the corridors. This gives you a sense of some of the work that we've done on transportation, particularly on our work on special projects, in terms of trails, Shandaken section. That picture of the little boy is riding on the Midtown Linear Park, and the picture of us walking through the woods is the Kingston Rail Trail. This is the some of the work we've done in demographics and other special projects, and you can see the numbers for Ulster County in terms of the census. The Veterans Cemetery location in New Paltz, as well as the tower in Saugerties, and that's an actual photo simulation of the proposed tower from Route 32 in Saugerties. On the housing side, we have a major effort with respect to housing ongoing from 2021, which will continue over to 2022. We will add a staff person that will be assigned to work on the housing action plan and on other housing initiatives within the department. We currently have a $600,000 grant for housing rehabilitation, and we are finishing up a $600,000 homeownership grant. The housing rehabilitation grant we have completed for right now. The legislature considered last night an application for us with respect to a home rehabilitation program. We're currently looking and working with RUPCO on the finalization of that application. We believe we're going to apply for about $800,000. We're eligible to apply for about $1.5 million, but there's only $23 million statewide. So we're looking at an $800,000 application, and we're having discussions with respect to the use of American Recovery Funds as a match. If we match those with American Recovery Funds, they would be used to essentially work with a green jobs program as well as do energy retrofits. So we would come in and do regular housing rehabilitation for code, and then go deeper into those housing rehabilitation with the county money to essentially do energy retrofits on those housings to save greenhouse gas emissions. In terms of other efforts, the county planning department was and continues to be engaged with respect to the reuse of the former jail on Golden Hill for workforce housing. Most of you are aware that we've chosen a developer through the Housing Development Corporation, and that they're engaged right now in public outreach. We're also having discussions with the city of Kingston with regard to our pilots that may be necessary for the project to proceed, and looking at when we're going to submit the necessary applications for low-income housing tax credits. We are beginning and have identified a first cut for priority locations for housing sites within the county, and have moved them out to some of the housing developers for them to consider. We also are working on our housing action plan and housing task force work. And we've started conversations with our housing consultant to develop the nuts and bolts of the Housing Smart Communities Initiative, which is contained in the housing action plan, and working with municipalities on that. We are starting to work with municipalities and private owners in those municipalities to develop a standardized RFP so that they can do what, at the local level, they can do what we did with respect to the county jail property. The department also produces an annual housing rental survey, and we continue to advise communities and developers on zoning and planning issues associated with housing. Any questions? To give you a sense of some of the housing work that we're doing, that's the idea of the work that came out of the housing action plan up in the left-hand corner. It's a rendering of what could be built on the jail site on Golden Hill in terms of and the site plan below it. And then we can also give you a sense of where our single-family pair operations that have taken place with prior monies, where they are with respect to the, a wait list that's out there right now by legislative district. So you get an idea that, you know, housing rehabilitation needs are scattered throughout the county. Open space. We do a lot of work with agriculture. The county planning department supports the Ag Farmland Protection Board. You see us on an annual basis coming to the legislature with recommendations from the Farmland Protection Board to add properties to agricultural districts. This budget contains a funding for the development of a new farmland protection plan, agricultural farmland protection plan. We believe we have funding available from the state. It was cut last year. We had this in our budget last year. We didn't do it because there was no money available at the state level. State Ag and Markets is telling us that there is funding available. It's about a $90,000 to $100,000 study, of which they'll pay for about 50% of it. In addition, we continue to work on the lower Esopus issues and discharges from the reservoir. We provided extensive comments with the lower Esopus folks on the DEIS that was issued by the Department of Environmental Conservation. And we are also engaged as a fiscal steward, we're engaged in essentially developing a Shokan stream management program. The legislature should know that we've hired a new deputy director for the planning department. That's Amanda Laval, who used to work in the Department of Environment. Amanda is spearheading this effort right now to begin to develop the RFP for this. And as a director, I sit on the Cornell Cooperative Extension board as a representative from the county executive's office. And I also sit on the Hudson Valley Agribusiness Development board as well. And then by title, I serve on the Farmland Protection Board. That'll give you an idea of the farmland that's out there, the Farmland Protection Board. I just wanted to give you a sense of what's out there with respect to that. And then land use and demographics. We do a substantial amount of effort with respect to land use. We work with every municipality in this county, except perhaps for Hardinburg. That doesn't send us zoning referrals, but our zoning referral efforts are extensive. They require a lot of staff time and staff resources. And we engage with a 23 member county planning board. You see those as appointments to the boards. To the board on occasion. Effectively, a county planning board has one vote for every action that is not ministerial that relates to land use in a municipality. And in order to overrule a county planning board's recommendations, instead of a simple majority, it requires a majority plus one. So we, as a board, have a vote on every land use decision made in this county that comes in front of the board. I would say that about 60% of the time, we don't believe that these things have a county impact and we pass them back to the municipality without comment. But there are other things that we take significant and make significant comments on. One of those has to do with short-term rentals in terms of the need to change zoning statutes as it relates to protection of quality of life issues and public safety as it relates to short-term rentals. The other one has to do with housing and inclusionary zoning. And we also get involved in such things as solar siting, where marijuana dispensaries can go, looking at individual projects in terms of how they're accessed, what their design is, stormwater work, other things that would normally come under the purview of a county planning board as it relates to environmental protection. So to give you an idea of some of the things that we're doing, on the right-hand corner, that's a picture of a school in West Hurley that was being proposed for an apartment building. It's a reuse of a school. We reviewed that and worked with the local planning board with respect to transportation issues associated with that. On the right-hand side, on the middle, is a proposal for an infill project in Milton. It's a nice little corner. It's on a corner in the Milton down in the town of Marlboro. It's a nice little project down there. creates about, I think there's 22 apartments, I believe, in that one. And on the far bottom is an infill project on Main Street in the town of Esopus. As you move out of the town of Esopus, just to the north of Boces, there's a little piece of land in there. That's an infill project there. And then on the left-hand side is a major project that involves a restaurant, a store, a pharmacy, et cetera. And that's on the gateway to New Paltz. It's on the right-hand side as you come in, just on the corner of 299 and North Putt Corners Road. We work with the community in terms of how to get the trail through there, the Empire State Trail through there, and also some of the design work here. The community took to heart some of our recommendations, and they created an overlay district. And within an overlay district, you have to build two stories, and the second story has to be occupiable. It can't just be a facade. So it gives you some of the ideas of the things that we consider with respect to our land use efforts. And we just talked about a little bit about the capital program and project support. We do a lot of work on that. We're currently engaged with the Government Operations Center effort with the RFP. I mentioned the Veterans Cemetery and the interoperability radio system, and also with respect to trying to find money for the UCAT bus garage. We programmed some money for the UCAT so they could start their initial design work for their bus garage on Golden Hill. And that's it.
Thank you, Dennis, very much. Does anyone have any questions? I have a couple of real small ones. Hopefully you can answer them quickly. Since we're an hour behind, just want to make everyone aware of that, right? So you talked about housing sites, where you feel like we have those. Is there any way you could send that list to our committee, Dennis, so we could take a look at it and see?
Sure. Yeah. Not a problem. These are first cut housing sites, and in a couple of you'll see a whole host of caveats on this. And the reason there's caveats on it is the last thing you want to do is surprise landowners that effectively they're on some list that they're just be aware of that. So I mean we pretty much caveated the heck out of this list because we don't want to basically make communities upset or landowners upset with respect to the idea that there's a potential for housing on their property.
Yeah, I'm much more interested in the municipalities and the shortages in each municipality, not necessarily the exact location of them, but more in a municipality level. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions for Dennis? Okay. So I'm going to ask you one more silly one. Okay. On your 2045 transportation plan there, right? So did, under the safety category, did anyone consider, this is 25 years down the road now. Okay, so let's put our 25 years down the road hats on. Has anyone considered self-driving vehicles in those safety plans?
Here's what I would say is that the long-range transportation plan has a whole section of it that deals with essentially trends and things that are coming down the pike that we need to be concerned about. And one of those that we do mention is ITS architecture associated with self-driving vehicles. Self-driving vehicles themselves, and the last thing I would say that people aren't talking about is e-bikes, which are also of some concern. And the interesting thing from our trails network is that as e-bikes essentially evolve, a lot of our trails network were built as extensions. They weren't built for recreational trails. They were built as extensions of the transportation system themselves. They may find themselves with e-bikes very much used as as part of the transportation system.
Got it. Thank you. Any other questions for Dennis? No. All right. Well, Dennis, thank you. As usual, you are thorough, informative, and always a pleasure to hear your take on things in the county. You're a guy that's been around for a really, really long time. No offense. But you have an unbelievable depth and breadth of knowledge of how this stuff works. And when you present, I appreciate it because I know that it's coming from someone that knows what they're talking about, and you are absolutely an expert in your field. So thank you again.
You know, And I appreciate that, but I really want to say that I can't say enough how much support that we get from the other departments. And I can't say enough about the fact of the dedication to my, to staff. Nobody leaves this office at 5 o'clock. They're here working, or they're working from home. And I'm getting emails on Saturday. They were thinking about things. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you, Dennis. I appreciate it. All right. So we now have the UCAT temporary, I guess, or interim director, Tony. It's going to give us a little information about the UCAT budget for 2022. Thank you.
Hey, hi, everyone. I'm going to share my screen with you right now. I want to say thanks. And are you, can you see that?
In 1 second, we're waiting for it to come in. There it is. Yes, now we can.
Okay, so I'll just start off. I'm the interim director here. So it's been a pleasure in the last couple of meetings talking to everyone. And I'm going to start with all of our COVID regulations that we've had to meet in the last year. Right now, we've increased our service levels. It started in August, so we're almost to 100% capacity for running our routes. Right now, the reason that we do not run all the routes is because we're having a severe driver shortage, as the rest of the country is. We are also, we still have mask mandates on public transportation, which is making it difficult for all of our drivers to basically police the public. We get numerous complaints about, you know, masks under the nose, and while we try to police it, it's getting really hard for everyone to continue to try to do this. The bus drivers are basically overwhelmed. We have our buses cleaned every day, and we're still doing the COVID-19 mandates. Right now, all unvaccinated UCAT employees, as the rest of the county, have to get weekly COVID testings. And I'm happy to say that there are only 14 out of 64 employees right now that haven't been vaccinated. Okay, we're also a recipient of some American Rescue Plan funding. We've received $1.3 million in funding. These funds, along with the rest of the 5307 funding that we'll get for 2022, will help offset our budget this year. We did not use any 5307 funding in 2019 or 20, so we'll be able to forward that funding also to 2022 if we do need it. In comparison to 2020, our UCAT ridership is rising and our fare revenues are starting to go up. We have state aid. We get state aid, which is dependent on our ridership. In 2021, they used our numbers from 2019. So hopefully next year, our ridership will increase and this funding will continue to stay the same, if not increase. Here's our ridership comparison from 2020 to 2021. As you can see, at the beginning of 2020, before COVID hit, we were around 36,000 passengers per month. And in 2021, it dropped to just 13,000. So once they lift the mask ban, our ridership started going up. And as you can see, in September, July, it started to decrease. In September, August and September, it's starting to come up again. Hopefully we'll see the ridership increase. We've done several things lately to help the passengers maneuver the routes. One of the things is we've initiated cue cards on all of the bus stops. Those will be going up route by route beginning next week. Passengers can just scan the cue card and find the route. We also have some capital projects going. Our capital project 610 is the UCAT equipment and facility upgrade. We're also purchasing transit buses, electric transit buses, and our first electric buses will be delivered in December. Those pictures are recent pictures of the electric buses that are just coming off the line in Alabama. Our mechanics went down last week and watched the first one be built and come off the line. And that's it. If anybody has any questions, feel free to ask. I'll try to answer any of them.
I just want to wish you luck. You know, I know that you were, you were kind of like have experience in this field. There's no question, but you're new to the job, and I want to wish you luck and let you know that we're here to support you in any way we can in the legislature. And I know that there's a lot of big projects coming for UCAT this year that are going to be, you know, quite challenging, right? As far as the new garage, new trucks, new charging, you know. The issue with the drivers, trying to keep and maintain drivers, right?
I think that will be our biggest challenge right now is getting drivers. Hopefully we'll start to get an influx of them, but yeah. It hasn't been promising yet. And yes, we're all looking forward to the electric buses coming in and the facilities.
Yeah. Deputy Milgram?
Yeah, just to add to it as kind of a highlight, Tony, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming to bat so quickly after the transition. And you've really been very helpful in your role. But the electric bus transition is pretty exciting. This is all part of a 10-year plan as we transition fairly rapidly from diesel and hybrid diesel fleet to an all-electric fleet, ideally within 10 years, and that is our goal. Part of that includes the build-out of en route charging system as well, which is ultimately going to be a significant capital investment that will be coming forward to each of you, and that's part of the capital program. Otherwise, we do have the first three electric buses coming online very shortly in just under 2 months. Our next purchase is also going to be electric vehicles, and I think our electric charging stations should be done next month in the UCAT headquarters up on Golden Hill. I think there's nine charging stations that will be able to recharge all those buses. So it is an exciting transition. It's just the beginning of a 10-year process, but it's moving rapidly. So.
Great. Thank you, John. Anyone have any questions? Okay. Again, Tony, thank you very much and good luck. And again, anything you need that we can help you with, just reach out. We'll be glad to do what we can.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. Thanks, John.
Problem. All right. And so last but not least is Mr. Tim Wiedemann from Economic Development.
Good evening, everyone.
Yeah. And you're only an hour late. So there you go.
I'll be really brief. I have a few slides that I'll walk you through, but mainly we'll leave it open for questions. First thing, though, I just want to remind everyone that the Department of Economic Development is just turning 2 years old. We're a new department, and so there's some of our work that continues to be to build a department where there was once a division. So I think you'll see some of that reflected in our budget request. So this is the quick overview. This is in your budget book, but just to summarize here, we are requesting an increase over last year's budget, primarily due to the addition of a position, one of our business services administrators, and I'll talk to that in a little while here. And, you know, a reminder of our department's mission and vision that, kind of growing out of our work on Ulster 2040 that defined a new economic development strategy for the county, we're focused on trying to accomplish that strategy. I think we think of our mission as trying to help grow long-lasting and shared prosperity in Ulster County by growing the local economy, improving equity and access to opportunity, and enhancing our community's existing economic assets. Our team, it's a great team, and we support each other. I would echo Dennis's point, which I could fill the slide with all the other folks in the county that have been of vital assistance in the work that we do, but just the core team here, you can see. And as I mentioned, we are requesting one additional business services administrator in 2022. That's the position that Barb Lauren currently holds in our office. It's been kind of the grunt of the department. This is the person who does a lot of our outreach to local businesses, our fielding of requests from local businesses. And increasingly, as we get into 2022, as you know, we've been awarded some funding for direct assistance to local businesses. And so that direct assistance working with businesses on the applications and the monitoring and evaluation of those applications falls into that role. You know, I think this is something that the legislators are aware of, but we think of our budget in programmatic areas. And this is where I think there's room to discuss, because this is a new department. And I think, you know, this is ultimately the work that we're doing to build the department and really refine the programs and services that we think of as the buckets for our work in economic development. So there's obviously the administration and reporting requirements of any department. We see Ulster 2040 implementation is probably in dollar figure wise, one of our biggest priorities for our department's work. We have ongoing work for strategic planning and development of the department. This relates to work that I know you're all familiar with, that we do both as a department and also thinking about our partners, whether those are, as mentioned before, tourism and OET and the EDA, the IDA. So really trying to do that work to grow and refine the system and toolbox of economic development resources in our county. Engagement and communications. And then our kind of other core services of business retention and expansion, as well as attraction. And then, you know, in partnership with a lot of the work that Dennis and the planning department does, we as well try to do research and studies and gather data to be able to support our work. I won't belabor this because I think this ends up being an area where I could spend a lot of time and try to wow you with all the accomplishments, but I have highlighted some of them here. We've been a busy department, and I would just echo again, the work that we do is supported by a great team, both in the executive's office and in our back office departments, as well as I think increasingly an alignment with the work of OET and tourism and planning and the Department of the Environment. It's important to note that we've been kind of another area that's kind of new for us is refining how we move forward with our Ulster 2040 strategy. You'll maybe recall, or maybe it was buried in the details, but last year we requested and received authorization from the legislature to enter into a contract with UCEDA for the purposes of funding implementation of key priorities in the Ulster 2040 strategy. We think of those in these five areas. So to build our cluster networks, to develop the workforce that those important clusters we identified in Ulster 2040 require, to continue to do research in those cluster areas, in particular clean energy and the environment, which we often talk about as kind of a new and emerging cluster, making sure that we're thinking about the research and commercialization that's really an opportunity in that cluster, and that we provide access to capital and equity in order to grow these clusters in a way that's equitable. And then there's, you know, as with all things, administration and reporting and overhead related to that work. Just to give you a sense, and I know this has been a request in the past, and so I want to demonstrate our effort here to take our budget and break it down into discrete pieces. And so this gives you a sense as we think about our professional services budget, which is a request for $275,000 consistent with last year. These are the kinds of things that we in our kind of planning for 2022 have been looking at doing with that contractual services budget. You'll see a number of those items are continued implementation of Ulster 2040 in those five areas I just covered. But then some additional work, one that we're really exploring with OET now is to try to supplement some of the federal dollars for training programs, which I think came up earlier in this call as Thomasine was giving her update. And then our strategic planning and our partnerships with other organizations in the community, our engagement, and you know, importantly, you know, I think you all are aware that I have a background in economic development. Many in our team don't, which I see as actually a strength, but it means that there's a need for continued staff development and training for our department. The other two kind of contractual areas that we have in our budget, one of them is small, just $6,500 for memberships. Those include the ones that are listed here, which are typical memberships. The newest one would be EMSI, which is a data and reporting tool that allows us to look at economic conditions in the county in a much more granular way than we've been able to in the past. And then our contractual, our miscontractual expense includes kind of the miscellaneous stuff that isn't fit into our professional services and memberships. that's the high level overview. I know that we've been here lots longer than we anticipated tonight, but I'm super eager and happy to answer questions, dive in deeper wherever anybody would like to.
Eileen, go ahead.
So Tim, thank you. I appreciate the drill down. You anticipated the questions appropriately, so thank you for that. I just am a little curious about this EMSI data reporting tool. Have you started using it? Have you? What kind of reporting are you expecting to get from it? What basically? Where do you see it's going to add value? And what kind of data are we going to get from it?
Yeah, it's a tool that actually we didn't purchase this year. We put in the budget to request the funding to purchase it next year. It's a tool that I know Thomasine and team at OET have used in the past. They switched a couple years ago to a different tool called Chimera Analytics. There's a workforce component to this tool, so it can tell you about the number of qualified applicants in various occupations. It can tell you about demand for those occupations by local employers. It also has substantial data about employers themselves, their revenue, their key suppliers, the number of employers in each sector in our local economy. It's a tool that we're looking to purchase in coordination with several other counties in the region. We have a bi-monthly call with other regional economic development directors, and there's several of them that are looking at this tool. Actually, Dutchess County has it, and they've started to explore with their sales rep the possibility of a shared purchase across several counties that would get us a discount. It's a really powerful tool. I've used it in past kind of professional capacity for things like drive time analysis. You can do a quick quick mapping and then analysis of demand for different consumer goods, for instance, within a 20 minute radius, which can be really helpful if there's a business that's looking for a retail location, is trying to find the right location, among many other things.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any questions? I just have one real quick one, Tim. You said that your department hosted two roundtables with area businesses that are in need of employers, right? And how did that work out? Do you know if they ever bore any fruit and people were actually connected?
Yeah. So this is an example of, like, you know, if we had all night, I would go into lots of detail on each of these things because there's a lot of story to tell. This was grew out of back during the pandemic. The Mid-Hudson Small Business Development Center, which you all probably are aware, is based here in Kingston. And so although it serves a 7-county region, we get kind of special status because they're co-located here. They received a grant with CARES funding to hire 3 additional counselors. Those counselors were a little bit at a loss as to what exactly to do during the pandemic because there wasn't a lot of the traditional business counseling need. It was kind of emergency need. They ended up spending a lot of time talking to employers about what is their core need right now. And what they heard across the board, this is kind of our first warning sign of what was happening early in the pandemic, which is that employers were unable to find employees. So we heard that, and it was coming particularly loud from our manufacturers. Remember, during the pandemic, there was kind of this surge in demand for some of our local manufacturers because of supply chain issues globally. And so they started raising the flag on that. And so we ended up connecting with the Council of Industries, which is, you know, an amazing partner in the region that focuses on manufacturing businesses. And they have a tool that is a jobs portal, basically, for their members that allows all of their manufacturing members to list all open positions, and it posts them on 7 or 8 different job boards. It manages applicants. It's an applicant tracking system. And so we started formulating a plan to provide, through a very small contract, it was generous for Council of Industry to do this, access to every Ulster County manufacturer to post entry-level positions on that platform for free. And so we had at least 12 manufacturers, mostly the larger ones, which are kind of really acutely in need here, take advantage of that. They've posted somewhere in the range of 60 or 70 positions. We've had at least a dozen or so that have been successfully filled through that platform itself, or at least that we can tie directly back to that platform. It's likely that there were more as well, but they've been very happy with that. And so we had 2 meetings, one at the beginning where we got the feedback about how difficult this was and how we might be able to help, and then one more recently that confirmed that this is a tool and a resource that's really important to them. And hopefully it will continue to be a resource that the Council of Industry is able to provide free of charge for our manufacturers. It's kind of an enticement ultimately for those manufacturers to become members if they're not already, so that they can post all their other jobs in addition to these entry-level jobs.
That's great. Thank you. I was hoping to hear something like that. Anyone else have any other questions or comments for Tim? All right, so I just want to take a moment and recognize Tim for the hard work that he's done. Tim is often has an extremely bright light shown on him for the work that he does, and he takes a lot of questions on a daily basis from legislators especially, and I just want to just acknowledge the work that he does and his ability to explain what his department's take is and why they're doing what they do. And I know that sometimes it seems like, you know, we're not with you, Tim, but I just want to reiterate that I know as a committee, we are with you and we support, you know, the economic development efforts of the county. And, you know, that we will challenge from time to time. There's no question, but we will always support the economic development activities from the county. And I just want to take a minute to say thank you for your hard work there.
Yes, thank you. And what time did you get home last night?
Pretty late, but you did too also. I just say thank you, Legislator Cahill, and thank you to the members of the committee. I you know, I know that sometimes we challenge each other, but I love this job. I love the work that we're all doing together. I believe in it fully, and that's why it's easy to stay up late every night working on it. So,
all right. So is there any other questions that any old business from the committee that you want to bring up tonight? Or this is a special meeting, so probably don't. Any new business that we didn't cover, Legislator Archer?
No, but I wanted to thank you, Chairman Cahill, because this was really helpful and beneficial as we're going through this budget cycle. So thank you for having the meeting. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm glad to do it. You know, that's less questions we have in the coming weeks, right? And right. Makes the budget process go a little bit smoother, right?
One other item, if we could just get copies of everybody's presentation, it was really helpful. That would be great. Yeah. Thank you.
I just sent them all a power email asking for that.
Yeah. And Legislator Corcoran, did you win? Did you win? No, sorry.
Not tonight.
I just thanks
for asking.
All right.
I just wanted to thank Amber too for all the work she has been doing, putting these budget figures together. She really has uncovered a lot of, glitches with the budget, and I think she deserves a lot of credit. She's working really hard getting all this budget information together.
Yeah, this is just one committee, and there's a lot of committees and a lot of other departments that she's doing the exact same thing on. It is definitely appreciated.
And she and Natalie both have been combing through that huge budget, and
Okay, so unless anyone has anything else, I'll accept the motion to adjourn.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you, Herb.
I'll second that.
All right. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate your time. Okay.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Be safe.
Thanks, Brian.
Yep, bye-bye.